Hi everyone, welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I am really excited for my guest today. She talks all about heart-brain coherence, and if you've been listening to the podcast a while, you know I'm all about heart math, and I love talking about this kind of stuff, so I think it's going to be a really fun conversation today. First, couple quick announcements. As always, head over to the links in the show notes. You're going to find a lot there. First, you're going to find ways to connect with my lovely guest. You'll find ways to connect with me on social media, ways to sponsor the podcast if that's interesting to you. You'll find a link to my two television shows that are more on the metaphysic kind of woo-woo side, so go check those out as well. And you'll also find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by three people from the film The Secret: Marcy Shimoff, Bob Doyle, Michael Beckwith. It was endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, Anita Morjani, who wrote Dying to Be Me. So go check it out. It's audio, paperback, ebook, everywhere you get your books. What else? Oh yeah, as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing phenomenal things in personal development. We have events pretty much every month with incredible headliners. I was just on stage with Joseph McClendon and Jim Quick and Les Brown and Dr. Joe Vitale and Sharon Lecter. Like, there's just incredible people coming through. Come be a part of what we're doing. It's so much fun. And we're helping humanity in the process. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, so with me today, I have Dr. Caitlin Lehman. So Dr. Caitlin is reshaping the conversation around heart-brain coherence, revealing its transformative potential to spark change, from personal well-being to the evolution of global systems. As the founder of Quantum Clinic in LA, she has developed the coherence method to address chronic stress and inflammation, two of the most critical drivers of disease. The coherence method integrates neurocardiac function through cognitive entrainment and emotional regulation to help clients achieve deep, lasting wellness. Dr. Lehman holds a PhD in clinical psychology and is a lifelong student of non-dual spiritual teaching. So welcome. I'm so happy you're here with me.
I'm so grateful to be here, Chris.
Yeah, and I can already tell we're going to get along and it's going to be a great conversation. And we already bonded. We both have like a cat and a dog running around. So it's going to be great.
Totally.
So I always start my episodes off the same way, and that's by asking my guests, what is your origin story? So what is it that put you on this path to opening the Quantum Clinic and teaching all these things?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking it. Gosh, an origin story. Okay.
I know. Well, I like the way it sounds.
I'm going to lean into the metaphysical explanations for this because I think that that's something that really might resonate with you. But I have been on, it goes by many different names, but what's called path work, or, you know, just deep inner listening and a recognition of sort of one's purpose, one's calling, one's dharma for many years. I was raised by two transpersonal psychologists up in the Bay Area. I like I said, I've been sort of exploring non-dual traditions for many years, meditating since I was a kid. I kind of grew up in Palo Alto going to see like Adyashanti speak off Middlefield Road and many other contemporary spiritual figures who passed through the Bay Area at the time when I was growing up. And then sort of as is the way for many, I had to kind of find that sweet spot between passion and kind of pragmatic, you know, day-to-day like activities in the world, right? So after college, I moved out to Los Angeles, and that was in the, you know, 2009, 2010 era. And I decided to go back to school because the work, the employment that I found at the time was not very fulfilling. I went back to school for clinical psychology and pursued kind of every opportunity I had for volunteerism. My work has always sort of been at the intersection of intra-individual and macro systems. Like what is the relationship between our individual thoughts, beliefs, emotions, et cetera, and the global phenomena that we are presently presented with, thinking of like the big existential issues, geopolitical polarization, global climate change, things like this. That's always been really fascinating for me. And that led me on a path of discovery, both of self-discovery and also just kind of discovering my unique gifts and talents. And you know, over time, you know, I finished my degree and it was during the pandemic, actually, that I had a series of recurring dreams that encouraged me to actually go to the river. And our business is located on the beautiful LA River in a part of town called Elysian Valley. You know, one thing led to another, and I you know, took the necessary steps to secure the lease and to figure out how we were going to do it and kind of put everything together, put the pieces together. And now we've been open for about 2.5 years and it's going really well. We're very grateful to do this work.
That's awesome. I didn't even tell you I'm in the Bay Area. So cool. Yeah. That's really cool. You were totally meant to have the parents you did, huh?
Yeah.
That's really, really amazing that you were, just kind of introduced to all of that at such a young age. Okay. So you said that one of your big interests is kind of how, and I'll just say it in my own words, and maybe this is what you meant, like our inner world creates our outer world, like how our thoughts and our emotions and our beliefs kind of affect things on a global scale. So I'd love for you to just talk about that for a moment, because that's really, really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it came from, it sort of was necessitated by the perceived helplessness and overwhelming despair that I experienced when I began to learn about the ecological challenges that we face, be it, you know, topsoil degradation or, you know, increasing severity and frequency of extreme weather events or pollution in our waterways and our oceans, you know, you name it, right? The more you learn about the not insignificant challenges that we're up against, the more hopeless it all kind of can feel at times. And you know, that led me to inquire with others, was I alone in this? And do others feel the same way? And, you know, I did some research around that when I was in graduate school. You know, and what are the main takeaways? What are the lessons that we can learn from these experiences to extrapolate them and support, you know, not only a healthier inner environment, but a more reciprocal and sustainable relationship with the external world. And so that's kind of been my quest. That's been my passion. That's been my area of exploration for many years. And I do think that it's an incredibly personal journey that each one of us are required to go on, you know, throughout our lives is, you know, kind of an exploration of impact and, you know, how we choose to respond to these existential threats, is an ongoing discussion. But what I realized through that process was ultimately, you know, while I have relatively less agency in sort of global affairs, I do have an immense amount of agency in how I show up internally and in relationship to those in my immediate environment on a daily basis. And in so doing, you know, creating that inner harmony through the practice of coherence, I'm able to be more present and more grounded and more capable in my relationships and in, you know, showing up when opportunities present.
Yeah, totally. And I think a lot of people can kind of feel that way, especially about like the environment, like you said, and also about like wars going on or just like crazy things happening in the world. But like, and it's kind of a hard thing to wrap your head around, but like so many spiritual teachings tell us our inner world creates our outer world, right? Like angry people can't create a peaceful world. It just doesn't exist, right? So the healing starts within. And then like, as you said, that kind of ripples out to your community, and then it can ripple out to those people's community. And that's really how you start to heal a sick society.
Yeah, it can, you know, and of course, I think we can't, you know, one of the things that I sort of am skeptical about in contemporary spiritual circles and discourse is a tendency to rely on reductionism, right? That if I do this, then my life will be better. It's like, actually, no, sometimes spirit guides us to endure things for which there are no answers, right? And it's not actually about changing our external reality, though there's a tendency to want to talk about how do we manifest, and there, you know, you can go down lots of rabbit holes as far as that goes, but like we don't have control over what happens in our life. We have control over how we respond to the adversity we're confronted by. And if we're awake, then our responsibility is to not go back to sleep and to not turn away from the suffering that is a part of our world, right? I think it's unrealistic to expect there to be some utopia at the end of it, because our world is far too complex for that. But to really do the inner work that allows you to become more resilient, more capable, and more grounded in your actions on a daily basis is generally a good thing.
Yeah, totally. I think it's important that you point that out, because you're right. There is a lot of like, let's focus on the future and how do we change things. And I'm a big proponent of that, but we're also here to have human experiences and to learn and to grow. And this is kind of all a school for us, right? And it's through the challenges and the heartbreak and the tragedies and the adversity that we do get those opportunities to kind of level up and grow. So, yeah, it all serves a purpose for sure. Yeah.
Another thing on that topic would be, you know, we can't separate our experience of understanding from the hyper individual collectivist culture that we've been, you know, raised in for the vast majority of us from the West, right? There's a greater degree of emphasis on the individual as the agent of change in, you know, our world. And when it comes to a discussion around these larger global themes, you know, that can actually serve the function of minimizing the importance of accountability and responsibility for systems, right? For larger organizations like corporations, for government, for, you know, these bigger institutional players in our world. We have to remember that advocacy and agency are an important part of our work in the world, and that this excessive, for some people, self-focus, which can result from some of these, a misinterpretation of these spiritual practices, actually just leads to these narcissistic echo chambers in which we're all, you know, really, really focused on self-growth at the expense of others. And it can lead to some, in some cases, a perverse form of sort of spiritual gaslighting or scapegoating when others approach us with authentic need for accountability or repair or whatever the case may be, right? There, I see a lot in spiritual circles a tendency to do that. And
I feel like it can also make people just really passive about it too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of share a little. So did you ever watch that show Dark Matter? It came out like a year ago.
I should watch it.
What's that?
I should watch it. I don't know that I've seen it.
It's based on quantum physics, like the idea that the many worlds theory. So yeah. That there's just like all these different timelines happening simultaneously. And basically this physicist builds this box that you can go into, and it opens all these doorways, and in each doorway is like a parallel reality of like the current reality. And I bring it up because one of them was like this, like, I mean, there were so many like messed up ones, right? As you can imagine, but there was this one that was like this total utopian kind of, it was still a city. It takes place, I think, in Chicago, but it was still a city, right? But like, it was built in a way that was like sustainable, where like the people were taken care of and like thought to, the environment was put in, and like everything, it was just like in a beautiful, harmonious way. And it was like, I think back on it, I think I've mentioned it on this show a couple times now, because it, like, I have a 1.5-year-old and I'm pregnant right now. And it's just like, part of me, it just like kills me that I'm bringing them into this world that is like so messed up in so many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you're talking about, where these corporations do corrupt things for money, and we are treating the environment badly. And it's like so many people know better, but it's kind of like what you were talking about. It's like, okay, how much agency does individual people really have? And this idea that like, I really do believe the universe is kind of like the Facebook algorithm. Like whatever you get emotional about and you fight against, whatever you resist persists. And the universe is like, oh, you want to focus on that? Like here's a little more, right? Which is why I don't think like going out and like fighting for change is the answer. But it's there's something really heartbreaking about our current situation, even though it's the school and we're here to learn. I'm like, I'm kind of holding both of those things simultaneously, like, yeah, as a mother, yeah, and as someone like very spiritual.
You're actually speaking to the crux of the issue, right? Because we can't just put our heads in the sand and pretend that everything's hunky-dory, because to your point, you're raising future generations, as am I. And, you know, it's our actions, right, are the feedback in this world, right? We have a choice to exercise our speech. We have a choice to exercise our vote in this country still. And we have a choice to vote with our dollars, right? Our money and our daily, you know,
activity. And your time and attention too. These days. Yeah.
And, you know, we're at a time, I think, collectively, where these questions sitting in that discomfort around what is my role? What is my purpose? How do I exercise my agency given the contextual realities of my unique life, right? But what we know in general about happiness is it doesn't come when you're focused exclusively on me, 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 right?
Totally.
It is actually through service to something greater than oneself, to our community, to our family, to the larger world, or, you know, restoration of our ecosystems, et cetera, that we find purpose, meaning, happiness, joy, you know, in this life, right? And so I think we have to somehow separate out the conversation around confrontation of injustice in our world, right? From this notion of it being like a negative, like a fight, right? There have been many historical examples in which the motivation for those, the civil rights movement, women's suffrage movement, so on and so forth, have been motivated by deep yearnings in many, many people that were nonviolent, or that at least could express themselves through peaceful movements that were rooted in the kind of love that propels us forward, at love for our children, love for this planet, love for, you know, one another. I think that is a very, very strong motivating force, but we need to brighten that as opposed to feeding into the overwhelm, the despair, and the darkness that is still a very present reality.
Yeah, I think that kind of like demonstration in a peaceful way has made incredible change throughout the world. The protests I'm seeing lately are very destructive and very full of hate.
I don't know. I think they're
violent.
So I'm in Los Angeles, right? Everybody, most people may be familiar with the, you know, quote, riots that happened here in downtown Los Angeles. And I'm not denying that that happened, that there was damage to property and, you know, that it got pretty dicey there. But you look back at other historical examples in this city, and it really wasn't as bad as it could have been. And the news media was not necessarily covering thousands of people, tens of thousands of people who were gathered peacefully, you know, during the day, right? It's unfortunate that we have a tendency to overemphasize the smaller group of, you know, troublemakers at the expense of the larger message of peaceful action.
Well, that's just a trend that happens in everything, right? Because that's what gets clicks, right? That's how the media makes money.
Yeah. And we live in an incredibly manipulative media ecology. We just do, you know, that's a function of reality. And so, you know, again, everybody has to go through an analysis of how it is they choose to respond to these existential threats. And I think, you know, we're talking about one of them, right? An incredibly manipulative media ecology right now is an existential threat because it skews our perception of reality. And reality, you know, to kind of draw on quantum principles of quantum physics and sociology or social psychology, reality is a social construct. It's an agreement that we have with one another that gives us a frame of reference for understanding right and wrong, judgment. It allows us to function in the world, these sort of social contracts that we implicitly sign up for in this society. But back to the point, which is that each one of us have to go through a very personal process of self-discovery to arrive at a set of, you know, actions that are aligned with our soul's purpose, with our larger meaning in the world. And, you know, I tend to be someone who is a little bit more vocal, a little bit more engaged, you know, than your average person. And I think that apathy is a big challenge to get through, because, you know, this, a democracy cannot function without an engaged and informed electorate. And I think a lot of people really, just don't care anymore. Or are looking for some savior to come in on a white horse to rescue us.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've had to unfollow, not like unfriend, but unfollow a lot of people after this last election because there's just so much anger. And like, even still, it's like, I feel like people are just like swimming in anger. And like I said, like, angry people can't create a peaceful world. Like, that goes out into the quantum field, right? And like, we're going to just be reflected with more people and situations and circumstances that make people angry. To the media, like, I think we're all more alike than we are different. I think the media really helps with that division, makes us more divided, and it highlights the extremes. Just to talk politics, it highlights the extremes on the left and the right. Mm-hmm. But like, that's not the majority of Americans. The majority of Americans care about their families. They want to live in a peaceful world. They want to be happy. They want to be comfortable. You know, like, they're not out there like feeling so much hatred. Yeah. At least I hope not. Yeah, but I think we're all a lot more alike than we are different.
But the reality of social media is the more flagrant, erratic, chaotic, fear-driven your messaging, the more likely you are to get engagement, likes, follows, etc., because you're feeding to these primal, you know,
people like watching the drama too, and they get worked up.
Yeah. Well, people are also just yeah. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is too, like, when people are spewing hatred online, it comes from a place of their own pain and their own fear.
Right. And you know? So to kind of eloquently bring this back to our larger topic today, you know, this is genuinely how I've chosen to live my life, is in service of supporting people in achieving greater degrees of coherence. In not only in their physiological, you know, systems, right? The synchronizing the entrainment of respiration, heart rate variability, and blood pressure to support, you know, autonomic nervous system regulation and, you know, greater resilience at a physiological level, but also in terms of the development of a coherent narrative for one's larger life story, right? Everybody has a story. Everybody comes from somewhere. And, you know, psychology and research in my field shows that when you're able to organize that story into a meaningful narrative arc, right, or a coherent narrative arc, like, you're motivated by it, propelled by it. You know, and of course, then you can move beyond that and disidentify with the trappings of that story. But still, some may even argue that in order to transcend the ego, one should have a fully functioning, healthy identification with the ego, right? The ego is actually, analytic traditions talk to us about how it's actually very adaptive. It's important when someone, you know, confronts another person, for example, we want a fully functioning, healthy ego to be able to respond appropriately, right? If you didn't have an ego, you couldn't do that, right? And then, you know, the spiritual journeyers among us will go beyond that and, you know, begin to identify less with the, you know, comings and goings, the urges, the thoughts, the stories associated with that finite self, and identify more with the observer, right? And that's also healthy. But you know, I think we need spaces, places, and practices that support an integration of all of that. And, you know, our society is not great at supporting that so far. Something you spoke about earlier with being the issue with anger, you know, how come nobody's talking about the collective impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, and how we're still, frankly, I think there's been a massive schism or split in our collective, you know, capacity to humanize, right? I think often, you know, more and more so people want to live in a frictionless world, right? Where everything's just easy for them, right? But that's not life. That's not reality. In the real world, there is friction. And so you don't have to be beholden to anger and rage and stress and emotional overwhelm when friction happens. You can use it as an opportunity to turn in and to return to, you know, your coherent state as your baseline. And that can be really adaptive. But, you know, most people aren't there.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's kind of what we were talking about earlier, like, all of these things are here to give us the opportunity to learn and grow, right? Like, they kind of set the soil, like, ready the soil, plant the seeds, but then it's up to us what we do with that. And just because you're, like, more awakened or more healed doesn't mean, like, adversity or challenges are going to stop happening, but you can flip your perspective and see them as, like, oh, what can I learn from this? What's the next step I can take? How can I use this opportunity to grow, right? You ask different kind of questions instead of, like, why is this happening to me? Yeah. Which I think is, it's just, like, a shift in how you view everything.
Yeah. And, you know, just as a reminder to everyone, like, it's not a race, you know, it's not like, it's not a competition either, right? It's like, we're all here for the purpose of having a human experience. And the human experience is not all good, and nor is it all bad. It just is what it is. So I think acceptance is a big part of it for many of us. And, you know, I sort of lean into more of a Buddhist kind of orientation to life and growth and healing. So trying not to compare my journey to the journey of others, or trying not to judge. You know, practicing forgiveness, loving kindness. Those are all really important aspects of a life well lived, I think.
Yeah. And I think if everyone could hold those values, then we would see a much more healed world. You know, it really would be reflected out into the collective. Yeah.
So, but, you know, when one recognizes that you actually do have agency, that even in moments of acute stress, though it may be harder to do, you know, you do have agency to shift your internal reality in relationship to whatever the stressor is. And once you can begin to master that for yourself, it opens up new pathways or portals or dimensions of the human experience that can lead to all sorts of, you know, interesting outcomes or revelations or insights.
Yeah, I think it totally. And it's been what you've been saying this whole time. It's like you get to choose how you respond. And every choice we make dictates, you know, the timeline that we're going to be on or the reality that we see. Like there are, you know, infinite number of possible realities that exist, right? You don't have to just accept the one you're given by default. You can make choices that align you with a reality that you want to see.
Yeah.
And then you start to shift towards that reality.
Right. Yeah. And I see in our culture, more people choosing to align themselves with a hyper individualistic, material based, visions, right, for manifestation. And I guess for me, again, you know, I'm sort of like a collective liberation or bust kind of gal. Like if I had to choose, and you know, I do choose every day, it's like I'd rather put my time and energy and attention into supporting a collective awakening than I would in pursuing perhaps a more comfortable or, you know, flashy life.
So how do people use heart-brain coherence to help create a more harmonious world?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, if you're familiar with heart math, then you may be familiar with the research that, like, when we're in a state of coherence, we're resonating our frequencies roughly equal to that of the planet itself. So there's this resonance effect that takes place when we're in a state of wonder, joy, awe, or deep appreciation. And that in and of itself is sort of a metaphysical realization. It just aligns us with a type of intelligence which is so much greater than we could ever possibly imagine, right? If you believe in intelligent design or not, you know, like the Earth as a mass is just way bigger than any one of us. So I would rather be aligned with the Earth's heartbeat, so to speak, than not aligned with it, personally. But from a health perspective, it triggers sort of a cascading effect of, you know, something like 5,000 different biomarkers that encode for health and human functioning. So it's like genuinely a very optimal mode, right? That your neurochemistry, your neurophysiology, everything is working together to support your well-being when you're in a state of coherence. And that's really wonderful for folks who may be struggling with anxiety, depression, emotional stress, chronic fatigue, inflammation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, totally. Have you in your clinic done any research on like people's inflammation levels before and after or anything like that?
That's a great question. We're not currently set up to be doing any clinical studies. Okay. We could in the future. And, you know, if there's anybody out there who's like a researcher who would like to reach out, please go ahead and do so. We're more focused on the practice and the doing of it than the quantification of its effect. But it's clear from the research on both, you know,
biofeedback. Heart math does a lot, right?
Yeah. Heart math does a ton of research. And then also the research on flotation rest, because we offer flotation therapy at our facility, which it does, it's like grounding, right? If you're drawing, I always invert the positive and negative ions, but you know, you're drawing out the ions.
I don't know what they are anyway, so you could say it wrong and I'd be like, okay.
Right. Like the science of grounding, right? When you're connected with the earth, but it's the same in this, you know, magnesium rich, salt water.
I heard it's good for pregnancy. Is it good for pregnancy?
Yeah. What trimester are you in, if you don't mind me asking?
I just finished my first.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so definitely third trimester is a great time to be floating. But any time is a great time to be floating because it's, you know, essentially equivalent of taking a benzodiazepine without, you know, needing to take a benzodiazepine.
Perfect. Yeah, no, it's so amazing, some of the research out of HeartMath. And I always think about, like, how they've actually measured the heart's electrical field. And they're like, it goes like 8 or 10 feet, but that's also only because that's how far our instruments measure. So like, just think about that. Like if you're in a room full of people doing this, like, or just in a room full of people in general, like your field and theirs cross. And I feel like that just backs up everything we've been saying about how like, you really do affect everyone else and everyone else affects you.
And often I like to say that and remind people that matter has never been proven to exist.
Yeah.
Because the more you zoom in, right, the more you recognize that we are 99.999% repeating space. But space is not empty. It's full. It's full of, you know, electromagnetic potential and energy and information, which in physics are synonymous. There's equations that energy, information, it's all one and the same. So, and that energy at the Planck scale, at this the level of the quantum foam or fluctuation, whatever you want to call that, the soup, is nearly infinite. So, you know, and that our perceptual experience is feedbacking with that continually, right? Including the physiology of our nervous system, and therefore, you know, the qualia or the type of thought or emotional experience we're having, there's a dynamic exchange in perpetual motion occurring all the time. So once we recognize that, and that our perceptual experience is not limited to the confines of this physical avatar body or shape that I inhabit right now, it's actually part of a much larger unified field. Well, then we get to again, coming back to that word agency, have some type of, not control, I don't like the word control for this, but influence, impact, agency, sense of directive, right, or direction for that information or energy exchange that's happening. And it's just a good practice to be, you know, loving thy neighbor, you know, caring for one another. And again, this doesn't mean avoiding conflict or, you know, not giving voice to things that are difficult for us, right? That's a normal and healthy and adaptive part of interpersonal relationships, but we can also modulate that experience internally and see a lot of shifts in our outer world
too. Yeah. I mean, it's just quantum physics backing up that your inner world does create your outer world, and that we are much more powerful beings than we realize. I'm sure you've like seen the documentary or heard about like the square root of 1%. It's been around forever now, but it's like, for listeners that haven't, it's like in the 90s in DC, which was the crime capital of the US at the time, they had all these meditators meditate on peace for a few days, and the crime rate dropped significantly, traffic accidents dropped significantly, like hospital room visits dropped significantly. And they've reproduced this in war zones and schools and prisons. And they've realized that there's like a specific number of people in a population that needs to meditate on peace in order for a tipping point to be reached. And it's the square root of 1%. And if you think about that in the terms of the world, we have like 8 million people. That's like 8,000 people.
Yeah.
To just create minimal change.
Right.
And you don't have to be sitting there in meditation. You can have, like you were saying, like peaceful thoughts and feelings. So I really go back to that idea that like our inner world creates our outer world. And like, if you want a peaceful world and you want a harmonious world, you have to cultivate that within yourself first.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we haven't even like talked about like how specifically you work with people. So I want to give you a moment to just talk about that too. Like, do you guide them through meditations or breathing, or what are you doing?
Well, actually, what I feel called to talk about right now is what I recently launched is called the Coherence Journey. It's an online format. So it's, I'm happy to talk about our work at Quantum Clinic, but this is our first online offering that we've released through Quantum Clinic. And it's sort of a threefold process that goes through, you know, the first course is called mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy. So I'm really kind of breaking down some of the principles of kind of behavior change, reducing stress and anxiety from that more empirically based cognitive behavioral framework side of things. And then it goes into foundations of Buddhist psychology, which is really about self-compassion, connecting with one's values, you know, I take you through different meditations and different kind of lessons on the principles of Buddhist psychology. And finally, then the last part in the trio is a program that I created called Awareness in Action. And that's about taking all of this insight that you've just developed or been supported in reconnecting with, to bring it out into the world, right? It's really about the action piece. So that program provides the frameworks, the tools, the support for kind of recommitting to this cycle of rebirth and reconnection to one's purpose and taking it to the streets, so to speak. And that will be available in the show notes for folks who are interested to learn a little bit more about that. And that's something that if you want to engage in this work in a really kind of concrete and, time limited way, you can check out that online course offering.
That's really interesting. How do they take it to the streets? Like, what kind of action do you have people take?
Well, so for this, you know, it's about educating folks on the nature of the poly crises. It's about identifying the values and the different local opportunities. I have a ton of resources in there. It kind of draws from nonviolence, the nonviolence movements. I've aggregated a bunch of resources in there that can support people with connecting to different direct action or impact spheres. But it's also about entraining oneself to kind of do that inner work, that emotional, psychological processing work that allows us to sustain our activism. So for this, I draw a lot on the work of Joanna Macy, the work that's coming out of the Presencing Institute at MIT. We talk a little bit about Ken Wilber's frameworks for supporting people in then connecting to those opportunities and sustaining that movement building over time.
Very cool. And if people just want to connect with you on social media or your website or anything, if you want to share.
Yeah. You can always check out, I'm on Instagram at Dr. Caitlin Lehman. And our website is quantumclinic.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. It was so fun to talk to you today. And if you are listening, please send this to someone you think would resonate with it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the things. Let's help lift humanity up. Yes. Have a beautiful rest of your day, everyone.